Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Some prayers. They're actually the prayers which were the last writings of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, composed in 1907. He actually departed from the planet in 1914, but after 1907, he didn't write anything. He didn't really preach after that time. He didn't really do anything except chant. He was staying in Jagannath Puri as a Babaji from that time on, more or less. So we'll read what are actually his vows. He makes certain vows, very nice vows, which we should hear very carefully, and we should also try to follow those vows ourselves. But first of all, we'll read a short biography of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, entitled A Glimpse into the Life of Thakur Bhaktivinoda. Thakur Bhaktivinoda led a life of incessant labor and activity for Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He effected such immense good in the world. It was the spiritual attempts and divine writings of this individual that turned the scale and led the intelligent and educated community to believe in the noble precepts and teachings of Lord Chaitanya. If we look back one century, we can be astonished to find how degraded was the condition of the Vaishnava faith, which had its pure origin in the deep and majestic spiritual philosophy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Even vastly could not fathom the super excellent precepts of Lord Chaitanya's philosophy. Yet, due to the ignorance of uncultured men, the Vaishnava faith had been degraded and was considered a beggar's excuse for living at the expense of society. It was by sheer love for the Godhead that Thakur Bhaktivinoda expounded the deep philosophy which had remained concealed in the pages of the Vedas, the Upanishads, the Puranas, and the Bhagavatam. By his action toward divine service, and also by his words, set in simple language to be easily understood by readers in general, he has given this philosophy to the world. It is his writings and his divine, unparalleled character that have helped to produce a class of educated and enlightened men who are now proud of their Vaishnava faith and of their acquisition of the spiritual knowledge of the pure and sublime philosophy of Krishna, on which the stern teachings of Sri Chaitanya are based. Although born in opulent circumstances on September 2nd, 1838, Thakur Bhaktivinoda, who was given the name Kedarnath Dutt, had to meet many difficulties in his early life. His childhood was spent at his maternal grandfather's house at Bir Naga, from where he came to Calcutta at the age of 13 after the death of his father. After he completed his education, he was requested to be present at the time of his paternal grandfather's death. His grandfather, Raj Vallabha Dutt, had been a famous personality of Calcutta and had retired to a lonely place in Orissa to spend his last days as an ascetic. He could predict the future and knew when he would die, since he could commune with supernatural beings. Thakur Bhaktivinoda was present at the eventful time when that great soul passed away. And after receiving his grandfather's instructions, he visited all the major temples and ashrams of the state of Orissa. Bhaktivinoda Thakur then entered the educational service and introduced English education into the state of Orissa for the first time. He wrote a small book about all the ashrams of the state and mentioned an ashram which was on his ancestors' property. "I have a small village, Choti Mangalpur, in the country of Orissa, of which I am the proprietor," he wrote. "In that village is a religious house, which was granted by my predecessors to the holy men as a holding of rent-free land. The head of the institution entirely gave up entertaining such men as chanced to seek shelter on a rainy night. This came to my notice, and I administered a severe threat that his lands would be cruelly resumed if in future complaints of inhospitality were brought to my knowledge." Bhaktivinoda Thakur later took to the government service and was transferred to Bengal. In one town, he gave a historic speech on Srimad Bhagavatam, which attracted the attention of thousands. He made the world know what hidden treasures pervade every page of the Bhagavatam, which should be read by all persons having a philosophical turn of mind. He was transferred some years later to a town named Champara. In this town, there was a Brahmadaitya living in a great banyan tree, and he was being worshipped by many degraded people. A Brahmadaitya is a type of ghost. One day, the father of a famous girl scholar came to Bhaktivinoda for alms, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur at once employed him in reading the Bhagavatam under the shade of the banyan tree, which was the abode of the ghost. After 1 month, the Bhagavatam was completed, and then and there the tree crashed to the ground, and the ghost was gone for good. Everyone was thankful for this act, except the few dishonest persons who were worshipping the ghost. Bhaktivinoda's next move was to Puri. The government commissioner was much pleased to get him in his division, and he asked him to watch the affairs of the temple of Jagannath on behalf of the governor. It was through Bhaktivinoda's exertions that many malpractices were checked, and the time for the offering of foods before the deity was regulated to its extreme punctuality. Shri Shri Radharadana Ki. Thakur Bhaktivinoda was especially entrusted to quell the rise against the government of one Vishikashen, who declared himself to be an incarnation of Mahavishnu. During the course of his investigation, Thakur Bhaktivinoda found him to be a hoax and a culprit and charged him with transgressing government injunctions. After his trial, the fellow was sentenced to imprisonment for a year and a half, but he died shortly after in jail. This man was really possessed of unnatural powers, but as they were the outcome of non-spiritual practices, he had to submit to the Thakur when the latter wanted him to do so. Vishikashen was held in dread by the common people, and everyone warned Srila Bhaktivinoda not to admonish him, even for the sake of justice, in view of the serious consequences that the yogi would inflict. But although the Thakur was not a man of ostentation, and did not allow people to know his true qualities and spiritual strength, he easily cut down the demoniac power of the impostor. Probably you've heard of Hrishikesh. You all heard of Hrishikesh? He was a famous magician in India. And he was a real mystic. He had very real mystic powers. He had very long, bushy hair, which sort of stuck out like one other person you've heard about. Including some people also consider tradition of tradition. Here we won't mention his name. But he looked like that. He looked very sort of, he was a very extraordinary looking person. And among many other things, he could make sparks come out of his hair. He could challenge the sort of forces within the body in certain ways. So he could do all sorts of things. So he was not only trying to gather a following and make a nice living from that following, but he was actually preaching revolution. He was preaching revolution against the British government of India. And even that in itself was a fairly popular cause. So he actually gathered quite a following of different sorts of people, on the basis of his mystic powers and this type of political motivation that he had. So he was a real threat, actually, to the British government in India. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur arrested him, but then the man told him that if you don't let me go, then all your family is going to die. And sure enough, the same day, the whole family came down with a terrible fever, and it was all their conditions were diagnosed by a doctor, and he said that actually it's very likely they're going to die. This is so severe, and even Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was practically completely bedridden by it. He had to actually be carried to work in the courthouse. But he didn't back off at all. He didn't back down in the slightest. And even on the final day when he pronounced judgment, he had to be carried. He had to be carried to the courthouse. And he pronounced the verdict and the sentence. And then Hrishikeshayan turned to walk out, and one of the clerks of the court, he was a Britisher actually, he jumped on the man from behind. He just sort of did a diving tackle on him, smashed him to the ground, and then sitting on his back, had a pair of big scissors, and he sort of hacked the man's hair off. And then right at that very instant, Bhaktivinoda Thakur suddenly felt fine. He suddenly felt completely fine. And his family, they just suddenly completely recovered right on the spot. Because actually Hrishikeshayan's power was held to at least a large extent in his hair. This is why mystics, they generally keep long hair. Because the longer one's here, in many cases the longer one's here, then the more one may be prone to experience mystic powers. So anyway, that was Hrishikeshayan. Then he was put in prison for a year and a half, but he felt so embarrassed for whatever reason, he committed suicide in prison. With the fall of Hrishikeshayan, there rose an impostor Balaram at another village, and there were also other so-called incarnations of God, but their plans were similarly frustrated. During the stay at Jagannath Puri, Thakur Bhaktivinoda devoted much of his time to the discussion of spiritual works and prepared notes on the Vedanta Sutras, which were published with the commentaries of Baladeva Vijayabhushan. He also composed the Kalyana Kalpataru. This may very truly be termed an immortal work, and it stands on the same level as the divine writings of Narottam Das Thakur. It's a collection of songs. Another malpractice that Bhaktivinoda Thakur corrected, which was very significant, was that the king of Jagannath Puri, he was in the habit of taking advantage of his position and taking money from the temple to use for himself. So one day he took 80,000 rupees, which in those days was like 80,000 pounds, which even, you know, today is 400,000 rand or more. So in other words, he took a very large sum of money, a huge sum of money. That would probably be worth many, many tens of millions of rands now. So he took that 80,000 rupees, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was overseeing the temple, he found out. So he demanded that the king return the money, that the king didn't want to. The king got very angry, so he engaged a whole large group of tantric brahmins to perform some particular special tantric fire sacrifice with a view of killing Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So the procedure was that they performed this particular ceremony, and with the final ablations into the fire, through the potency of that particular ceremony, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was meant to immediately fall down dead. So they went through the whole function and poured the final ablations in, and then the king's son just fell down dead on the spot. And then the king returned back. In 1877, he left Puri on government service, and in 1881, he started a well-known spiritual journal called Sajjanatoshi, The Satisfaction of Pure Devotees. He also published the Sri Krishna Samhita, which revealed to the world the underlying philosophy explaining the spiritual existence of Krishna. This book opened the eyes of educated people to teach them their true relationship with God. It also attracted the admiration of many German scholars, for although the public regarded Krishna as a poetic creation of erotic nature, Srila Bhaktivinoda revealed Krishna as Parabrahma, the supreme transcendental person, the absolute being, on the basis of Vedic evidence. At the close of his stay at the village of Narayan, he visited Vrindavan. There, he had to encounter a band of dacoits known as Kanjharas. These powerful bandits spread all over the roads surrounding the holy place and used to attack innocent pilgrims. Bhaktivinoda Thakur brought this news to the government, and after many months of struggle, extirpated the bandits from Vrindavan forever. From this time on, Thakur Bhaktivinoda preached extensively in large gatherings, explaining all the precepts of the Sankirtan of the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. While staying at Barasat, Thakur Bhaktivinoda met the famous Bengali writer Bankim Chandra. This novelist and playwright had just finished writing a book on Krishna, and knowing Srila Bhaktivinoda to be an authority on topics of Krishna, he gave the manuscript to Bhaktivinoda Thakur to see. It was full of mundane Western stylized speculations and ideas, but after 4 days of discussion, Bhaktivinoda had the whole text revised by Bankim Chandra to accommodate the pure supramundane precepts of Lord Chaitanya. During his last year at Barasat, Bhaktivinoda was requested by a noted High Court judge to publish an authoritative edition of Bhagavad Gita with the commentaries of Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's, as well as Bhaktivinoda Thakur's own. The preface, written by Bankim Chandra, expressed his gratitude to the Thakur for his endeavor, and when it was published, the copies were soon exhausted. Then, Thakur Bhaktivinoda published a unique work entitled Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita, The Nectarian Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, which dealt with Lord Chaitanya's theistic philosophy and the philosophies of the Western speculators. This book defeats every other philosophy point for point and establishes the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya as supreme. In 1885, he started a society named Sri Vishnu Vaishnav Raj Sabha for the propagation of pure Hari Bhakti. Many eminent citizens of Calcutta joined the society, and several committees were organized with assigned duties. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was so anxious to see the land of Lord Chaitanya that he applied many times for a transfer to any town nearby. Upon not receiving the desired transfer, he formally submitted a resignation from public service, but it was refused. Then, to his great rejoicing, he obtained a transfer to Krishnanagar, 25 miles from Navadvip, Mayapur. Once stationed at a place near Navadvip, he did not let a single free moment pass without visiting the land of Navadvip. He had once made inquiries about the exact whereabouts of the different places of Lord Chaitanya's pastime. He soon discovered that the then city of Navadvip was a town of only 100 years standing. So he was curious to locate the actual birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. He was convinced that the town of Navadvip was not the authentic location, and he at once commenced a vigorous inquiry to find the truth of the matter. But he could not easily escape from the people who tried to make him believe that the birthplace of Chaitanya was at that town. Then, after careful inquiry, he was told that the site was lost under the shifting course of the Ganges. Not satisfied with this explanation, he himself set out to discover the yoga peat, the birthplace. After great difficulties, he came to know of a place which was being adored by many realized souls as the true birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and which was then in the possession of the Muslims. Local inquiry and corroborative evidence from ancient maps of the latter part of the 18th century, which showed the name Sri Mayapur, at last helped him to discover the real site of the birthplace. The discovery led to the publishing of a valuable book named Navadvip Dham Mahatmya. There's one interesting story in this regard. Some of you know this, but anyway, the story is that actually even to this day there's a big debate going on about whether the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya is where we regard it to be, where Bhaktivinoda Thakur established the place to be, and which was accepted by Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and Gaur Kishore Das Babaji and Jagannatha Das Babaji. Whether it's that place or another place on the other side of the river, just out on the northern edge of Navadvip town. And at that other place, it's almost like a replica of the place that Bhaktivinoda Thakur established, particularly just like at Lord Chaitanya's birthplace in Mayapur, you get the neem tree, you get the house, and there are deities of Jagannath, Mishra, Mother Sachi, and Lord Chaitanya. So over at the other place there's a neem tree, there's the little house. It's all there. And so many people feel that it's on the other side, even the Babajis of Radhakund. They all feel it's on, not all, but the vast majority take it to be on the other side. So once some newspaper reporters were interviewing Srila Prabhupada about different things, all sorts of things. They were interviewing Srila Prabhupada. And so they brought up this question that, how do you know that the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya is where you say it is, at Sri Mayapur Dham, and not over the river in Navadvip? So Srila Prabhupada gave so many arguments from scripture, but they weren't convinced. They weren't convinced, and they kept on and on and on. And they were saying to Prabhupada, but you're investing so much money, millions, so much money. What happens if it turns out in the end that you're wrong and the birthplace is on the other side? Prabhupada was saying, no, it's not like that. We're not wasting our money. We know. But still the reporters weren't satisfied. So then there was a group of American disciples of Srila Prabhupada in the room while this interview was going on. So finally, Lord Srila Prabhupada, in a rather frustrated mood, he turned and pointed to the American disciples, because Americans, after all, are famous, you know, everywhere, and particularly in India, for having lots of money and being very good at working with money and making money. So Prabhupada turned to them and said, you see these men? They're Americans. Do you think they would make a bad investment? And then the reporters all nodded. Very good point. So they were convinced. The year 1895 was the most... It was in this year that he officially memorialized the birth site of Sri Chaitanya and brought its true identity and importance before the public eye, as he found the place in 1891. But then he built a small temple, which was open, I guess, at that time. Just after retiring from government service, Thakur Bhaktivinoda himself, in a spirit of perfect humility, and with a view to giving a firm standing to the discovery, went from door to door to raise funds for a temple. In the Amrita Bazaar Patrika newspaper on December 6, 1894, the following article appeared. Babu Kedarnath Dutt, the distinguished deputy magistrate who has just retired from the service, is one of the active members. Indeed, Babu Kedarnath Dutt has been deputed by his committee to raise subscriptions in Calcutta and elsewhere, and is determined to go from house to house if necessary, and beg a rupee from each Hindu gentleman for the noble purpose. If Babu Kedarnath Dutt sticks to his resolution of going around with a bag in hand, we hope that no Hindu gentleman whose house may be honored by the presence of such a devout bhakta as Babu Kedarnath will send him away without contributing his mite, however humble it may be, to the Gaura Vishnu Priya temple fund. Unquote. Truly, Bhaktivinoda Thakur honored the houses of many persons for the fulfillment of the noble object he had undertaken. He went to persons to whom he would not have gone for any purpose but for this mission of Lord Chaitanya. And his efforts were not fruitless, since the sum collected contributed to the construction of a building on the holy site of Lord Chaitanya's appearance. The work of preaching the holy name was also in full swing, and it spread fast into the distant corners of the globe. The Gauranga Smarana Mangala Stotra, with a preface in English containing the life and precepts of Sri Chaitanya, came out from Bhaktivinoda's pen soon after the discovery of Lord Chaitanya. The Marian was Thakur Bhaktivinoda. He thereafter made annotations of Sri Brahma Samhita and Sri Krishna Karanamrita, and gave to the world his immortal and precious works, Sri Harinam Chintamani and Bhajana Rahasya. He also edited, with commentary, Srimad Bhagavatarka Marichi Mala, which contains all the most prominent slokas of Srimad Bhagavatam pertaining to the Vaishnava philosophy. His pen never tired, and it produced many other Vaishnava philosophies. He would begin his writings very late at night, after completing his government work, and stay up until 2 o'clock in the morning, composing songs and literatures. Most of his works appeared in the Sajjanatoshini magazine. He was equally engaged in writing and in preaching the holy name in many districts of Bengal. His personal appearances at villages had marvelous effects on the people. To maintain the center at Navadvipa, he built a house at Sri Godrumdum, which is called Sri Swananda Sukhada Kunj. Here in this abode, the preaching of Harinam continued in full swing. It was at the beginning of the 20th century that he chose to live at Puri and build a house on the beachfront there. Many honest souls sought his blessings and readily obtained them when he accepted the renounced order of life by taking Babaji initiation from Srila Gaurkishore Das Babaji in 1908. Though he was leading the life of a renounced soul, he could not avoid the men of all description who constantly visited him. All of them received oceans of spiritual training, instructions, and blessings. In 1910, he shut himself up and remained in a perfect state of samadhi, or full concentration on the eternal pastimes of the Lord. In 1914, he passed on to the blissful realm of Goloka, on the day which is observed as the disappearance day of Sri Gadadhar. Here we quote a stanza written on the samadhi of Haridas Thakur, which Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote sometime in 1871, to explain what influence a Vaishnava carries in this world, even after his departure. He reasons ill, who tells that Vaishnavas die, when thou art living still in sound. The Vaishnavas die to live, and living try to spread the holy name around. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur predicted, soon, There'll be a personality who'll preach the holy name of Hari all over the world. It is clearly understood that His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, is that personality. I offer my prostrated obeisances, first unto all the devotees that have surrendered unto His Divine Lotus Feet, and next unto the devotees who will in the future take shelter of His Lotus Feet. And I then offer my humble obeisances unto His lotus feet, again and again. So now I'll read some prayers by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Very nice prayers. It's called Sri Sri Swaniyama Dwadashakam. 12 verses of self-imposed regulative principles. The final work of Srila Satchitananda Bhaktivinoda Thakur in 1900s. So I won't read the... I'll just read the English. So, first verse. No matter when, whenever, and wherever I happen to take birth, let my loving affection and attachment remain unshaken throughout each and every lifetime for the following things. It's a good idea to try and absorb all this. And if we can follow these same vows, that'll be very beneficial for us. So he's vowing, first of all, to maintain affection and attachment for the following things. 1. For my divine spiritual needs. 2. For Sri Gauranga. 3. For the detailed topics of pure devotional service and the methods of its execution as personally instructed by him. 4. For the holy places of pilgrimage, such as Sri Navadvipa, Sri Jagannath Puri, Sri Vrindavan, etc., which are all blooming with divine sanctity due to his performance of wonderful pastimes therein. 5. For the Diksha Mantra bestowed upon me by the divine grace of my spiritual master, which overfloods my mind at all times. That refers to the Gayatri Mantras. 6. For the holy name of Sri Hari, my most dear possession. 7. For the most beloved eternal associates of the Lord. 8. For the sacred days of celebration throughout the year, such as Ekadasi, Janmashtami, Radhashtami, and the appearance and disappearance days of the great Vaishnava Acharyas, etc. 9. For the Lord's dearmost devotees, who strictly follow in the sacred footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami. 10. For the holy scriptures narrated by Srila Shukadeva Goswami, such as Srimad Bhagavatam. So those are under the subheading, the objects of devotion, birth after birth. Then, second verse, the eternal identity of Lord Chaitanya, the eternal God. The Supreme Lord Sri Krishna is the personified abode of all divinely ecstatic mellow tastes, and Sri Radhika is the topmost abode of all his divinely potent energies. Indeed, she is the personified form of the highest mellow of love in separation. Within the forest of Vrinda, which is gloriously rich in the all-pervading treasure of the sweetest Madhurya Rasa, this Lord Sri Krishna is content. This Lord Krishna is exactly identical to the son of Mother Satya, who eternally lives simultaneously yet separately in Gaudadesh as the instructor of the process for rendering his own devotional service. May this Satchinanda become my supreme master and guide, and may he always appear to me just to lead me on the proper devotional path, birth after birth after birth. 3. Rejection of things unfaithful to Lord Krishna's service. Let no form of so-called renunciation or asceticism be acceptable to me if it does not give rise to the continual expansion of my eternal serving mood of loving devotion. And let no form of so-called knowledge or intellectual cultivation appeal to me at all if it does not admit the reality of eternal individuality shared by the Lord and his devotees during their everlasting daily pastimes. I have no desire for practicing any branch of the Eightfold Yoga process, for none of them contain any scope for enjoying the daily pleasure of serving Lord Hari, such as his confidential worship does. Rather, may I render profuse, uninterrupted, confidential service 24 hours a day to Sri Sri Radha Krishna for all of time to come. 4. Where to live and where not to live. May I continuously reside in a small, lonely cottage at the base of a desire tree in the most holy abode of Sri Navadvipa Dham, sanctified by the lotus feet of Sri Satchinanda. Such a bhajan kutiya is perfectly suitable for constant remembrance of and service to the divine daily sports that are always present in Sri Braja Dham. Furthermore, I would never live in any other place, even if as far as all other places in this world are concerned, whether opulent palaces or temples, whether possessing enormous wealth or princely kingdoms and property, such places cannot attract me like my modest bhajan. I have no attachment to any of the caste divisions of society, such as Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Sudra, and I certainly do not identify with any order of life, such as Brahmacharya, or Sannyas. I have no fondness for the so-called piety of religiosity, or even for the so-called impiety of sinful life in this world, not even the slightest regard. Instead, practically required to maintain this material body in order to facilitate my performance of this is actual righteousness. This is the actual righteousness that I will hope for as long as this material body continues to exist. 6. Favorable authorized practices and devotional qualities. My solemn vow is constant devotion to the lotus feet of Sri Hari. In order to execute that vow, I have endeavored to develop the following qualities. I practice great humility in my dealings with everyone. I try to keep simplicity and purity prominent in all of my practical arrangements. I maintain extreme tolerance in all types of favorable or unfavorable circumstances. I offer all respect unto others, regardless of who. for all living entities and act according to who have fixed up an unalloyed devotion to the lotus species Shiva and Mahavira. And these are found described in the books that are full of the imperishable character and pastimes of Mahaprabhu, Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Only such transcendentally nectarian activities, being recommended by great devotees and practiced by Lord Chaitanya himself, are indeed my own. 7. Rejection of things that are disconnected from Sri Radhika. I have no attraction for living and part of the spiritual sky presided over by Sri Sri Lakshmi Narayana. Nor do I desire the useless activities of for attaining the divine bliss of impersonalistic liberation, even for a second. Furthermore, there are many transcendental pastimes of Sri Hari that may be very purifying for the conditioned souls. Yet such pastimes will never give me any real happiness at all. This is because of conscious consciousness. Being completely devoid of any relationship with Sri Radhika, who is the one and only fountainhead of pure joy. 8. Renunciation of all kinds of bad association. I now disown my wife, my daughters, my sons, my mother, and all my friends, if they have no genuine attachment for Lord Hari, for his devotees, or for devotional service. It is definitely a great sin even to accept food grains prepared by such non-devotional, materialistic sense gratifiers. If I were to remain in the company of these persons, then how will the eternal perfection of my Hari Bhajan ever come about? Avoidance of so-called devotees who proudly neglect Srimati Radharani. There are certain persons who appear to be very advanced in devotion. Indeed, to increase their service to the Lord, they have long since rejected the evil company of those who are blinded by faulty arguments arising from so-called intellectual knowledge. Those who are addicted to the fleeting pleasures of the dull material body. Those who are inimical to Lord Sri Krishna. And those who are fond of the inferior, distasteful concept of liberation as it's cherished by the impersonalists. Such devotees have thus favorably avoided all kinds of bad association. Yet, it is seen that these persons worship Lord Govinda without Srimati Radharani being present. Directed against Srimati Radharani, who is herself the best worshipper of Lord Govinda. Therefore, I'll never ever go anywhere near such so-called devotees, even for a second. This is my strict vow. 10. How to live simply and perform Raja Bhaja until death. Passing my life in a simple, practical way, eating only prasad. Wearing only the sad cloth that has been offered to the deity, using only the pots and utensils sanctified by the Lord's exclusive service, I'll thus remain completely aloof from material sense gratification, living by the side of Sri Radha Kunda, worshipping the and the souls of the devotees' lotus feet, who are themselves serving the lotus feet of the divine couple. I will thus give up my body. 11. How to worship the lotus feet of Sri Radhika's pure devotee. There's a class of pure devotee who's expert in following all the instructions of Sri Sri. Such a devotee incessantly and who's deeply absorbed every day in relishing the divine mellows of Sri Krishna's association. The pure devotee of this caliber definitely performs his confidential worship wholeheartedly and with exclusive surrender unto Sri Radhika, always living in Sri Vraj Mandala. I shall take the nectarian water that is washed, the lotus feet of such a devotee, and carry it on my head. Drinking it with great joy and with a devout heart, I'll then happily offer my full prostrations upon the ground in the nicest, most perfect way that I possibly can. This will indeed be my routine each and every day. 12. Firm determination to transcend Maya by daily following this verse. As a spirit soul, my natural tendency is to be eternally situated in the loving devotional service of Lord Hari. However, due to the powerful influence of the Lord's Mahamaya, I have somehow plunged deep into the fathomless ocean of material misery. I shall transcend this world of Maya and go to the spiritual world only by faithfully following these self-imposed vows every day. And the only way I'll get strength to follow these vows is by attaining the mercy of all the Vaishnava devotees of the Lord. May their causeless mercy, which wards off all illusion, become my exclusive companion for all of time everlasting. And now those are the 12 verses. And now there's a 13th verse called Phalashruti. This Priya named Swadhyana Dwaraka to regulate his own personal mode of performing bhajan. If any other devotee happens to chant this prayer with a very special quality of resolute faith, fully offering his mind unto the following, the supreme beautiful forms of the divine couple, Sri Sri Radha Govinda, his most dear possession, or to the divine beauty of their deity form, or to the beauty or deity of Sri Gaurasunda, the combined form of Sri Sri Radha Govinda, or to Srila Rupa Goswami, the dearmost beloved devotee of Sri Sri Radha Govinda and Sri Gaurasunda, then that fortunate reader definitely attains their own place of residence in Sri Vrajadhami. Always following behind their spiritual master, In their own spiritual body, they finally render all kinds of variegated eternal services for the exclusive worship of Sri Sri Radha Krishna. And that is the benefit he is offering to those who read and hear those vows very carefully. And of course, the words of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura will never go in vain. That's absolutely no question. Any questions or comments about Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura? Then perhaps I could make this a little... Just immediately, just a couple of days before Srila Kirti Prabhu departed from here to Europe, he called Mr. Gosdeep of Prabhupada's room and made, you know, rather sort of startling, but I'm sure were rather startling statements to all of you, or the great majority of you who are not familiar with what he was talking about. Those of you who are still to this day not really aware of what he was talking about, but it's probably better to just stay like that. Although I do suspect that it's fairly common knowledge by now. Anyway, as he announced at that time, I was going to look into the matter. In fact, I'd already started doing that. In fact, even just a few minutes before he, just even a few seconds before he walked in to make the various announcements that he did, I had already told him on the basis of what I'd already learned that I felt it wasn't necessary to go and make such a sort of, say, a disturbing type of announcement to the audience, but he felt that he wanted to. Anyway, because what I had already found out was, at that point, even at that point, going back to that time, that was sufficient to show that, to cast considerable doubt on the allegation or the claim that was being made, at least certain parts of it. So then I carried on looking into it, and then at least say a few days later, by the time it left, we uncovered more information which made those allegations look even weaker. And actually the person who made the allegation came to Shujikirti, who I was also there at the same time, and apologized to him at that point. And then, in a day or two after that, Shuji left. So now, you know, we've been pursuing the matter further, and even further things have come up, which, you know, they very pretty clearly show that really there was nothing in the allegations. In fact, one problem with the allegations is that the source of them has been so chronically unreliable that it's been, you know, I mean, if the person was to stand up in the course of law, I'm sure their words would be accepted, actually. But it was like that, chronically unreliable and chronically unclear and fluctuating. Anyway, I'm sure you're all familiar with the basic idea of the allegation regarding the character of Shuka that might have some association with a member of the opposite sex. You know, it appears after going into the matter as fully as possible, and even, you know, the person responsible for the allegation is quite insistent now, that member of the opposite sex was Shuta's mother, who was helping to look after him for the money and chicken pox. Anyway, you know, because of that, this whole sort of rerun developed, and, you know, it wasn't very nice at all. In fact, it was very disturbing, extremely disturbing to many of the devotees, and particularly Shuta. So we discussed it all yesterday in the temple council, and all the members who are also themselves very aware of all the different factors involved, we all concluded unanimously that, you know, that there's nothing of any substance at all in the allegations, and that as far as we're concerned, it's simply a dead issue. And we feel that it's just a dead issue that anyone should see as such. Which is good. It's good. So, and we all felt unanimously that it didn't, you know, any possible reflections or like tinges of doubt which might remain in anyone's mind, that it wouldn't influence our feelings or the feelings of the temple council as far as Shuta being the temple president is concerned. There was another aspect to the whole subject. It's just like a side issue altogether, but it did crop up, which was rather unpleasant, which I want to mention now. That is that in the course of the whole thing over the last few weeks, certain devotees, certain of our devotees here in Shishu Radharadana spoke to Shruta's mother in very explicit ways about the subject. At least one was on the request of the mother, but you know, you're all well aware that I was looking into it for one thing, and that, you know, I'm sure you're all aware that it's a serious matter, it's not just something for casual conversation, particularly with someone like Shruti's mother. But these two devotees that I'm aware of, I don't want to mention any names, but two devotees, they basically took it upon themselves to, you know, get involved. In one case, to start the legacy. And in the other case, being approached by his mother to allow herself to be drawn into the discussion without referring her to someone in authority. You know, I mean, it's unfortunate, it's very unfortunate, because Shruta's mother is extremely upset. Extremely upset. And it's also a little typical of a habit which the devotees have, or some devotees have, of not being able to appreciate what it means for a subject to be confidential. It's one thing, you know, like the American idea of freedom of speech. That's one thing, you know, that we shouldn't just, in a clandestine way, hold important information back from people. That's one thing. But in sensitive issues, where, you know, there's certainly, you know, very delicate matters involved, and we don't just go around discussing it here and there. So, you know, I'd like those of you who may have done that, I'm sure you know who you are, even though perhaps you've committed to that, try and just think about this a little, and please don't do this again. It's very good. We decided that we should announce it to all of you today, so that you'd all be aware of what came about.